the person who really prompted me to get looked at truly was my mother. Because my father had come to where I was working at the time on a local university campus. And we took this walk, and I didn't think a whole lot of it. And I get home after work that evening, and my mother's on the phone. She's saying, "Laura, your father tells me when you're walking, you're slapping your foot. What's going on?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, yeah, my leg's numb," but she said, "You need to have this checked out."
Everyone has a story to tell, and we invite you to join us for the Multiple Sclerosis Diagnosis Journey podcast and listen to these unique stories.
Greetings and welcome to the MS Diagnosis Journey podcast. I am clearly not your host, Laura Koloskowski. That's because she's the guest. My name is Steve Woodward. I was the guest in the first part of this series, and I've also been working as the podcast editor for the whole series. And I'd like to welcome Laura to the podcast. How are you doing, Laura?
I'm great, Steve. Thanks for switching roles with me today for this special episode.
That's cool. I mean, I kind of thought there's one person we've not heard from. I mean, we've heard from a lot of people, and I'm sure there's a lot more we could have heard from, but we've not heard from you. So shall we just jump straight into it?
Sure.
So what were the first symptoms that kind of made you think that's not normal? Scare quotes around the word normal.
Well, you know, Steve, I got to be honest. I pushed through all sorts of things that I should have said, that's not normal, until it really, I was forced to do it. It all began like in perhaps July of 2007, when walking to my mailbox, I realized that I couldn't feel my right leg. And I was like, huh, that's weird. I've had back problems before. I'm like, well, a nerve's pinched or something. It didn't hurt. My leg still held me up. It still moved when I signaled it to move, although it was a little different movement. And I didn't really think much anything of it, except it was a back problem. And then in September that year, my husband and I took a extended vacation trip, and we traveled to another city to catch our airplane. And I woke up that morning of the flight and went, that's odd. I'm so regular with my bathroom habits. Why aren't I? And the entire trip, I had to urinate quite frequently, and I had like no bowel movement whatsoever. The constipation was constipation plus for a week. And I still didn't think anything of it. It was like, oh, you're traveling, you're eating different. You know, it's like, okay, so I got a numb leg and I'm got irregularities with the bowel and the bladder. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like, okay, this is just life. This is what it is, because nothing was really stopping me. It was just nuisance things. Yeah. And then in January of 2008, I did have an episode that truly made me stop. And I had on Martin Luther King Day, a myocardial infarction. And wow. For those of you listening, that's a heart attack. When I went to the hospital, I had these weird symptoms of just in my throat. I couldn't quite swallow right. There was no chest pain, none of the symptoms that you think of with heart attack. It's just this weird little spasmy thing going on. I said, something's not right. We better go to the ER and check it out. So while we were there, of course, every doctor running tests was saying repeatedly, is there anything else wrong? And I would mention, yes, my right leg is numb. But in the midst of a cardiac episode, you know, everything is trumped by the heart. You know, everything revolves around what's happening with the heart. Nobody really cares that your leg is numb, right? So I was released from the hospital with a diagnosis of my MI was caused by vasospasms of some unknown origin. That's my official diagnosis. Yeah.
Yeah. I do love the fact that we've kind of got to the end of the series and then you just kind of roll in and go, heart attack. Everyone else has been sort of like trapped nerve, feeling a bit tired, feeling a bit more tired than normal. And then you go, oh, I had a heart attack. It's like you bring out the big guns for the last episode.
Yeah, I like a little bit of drama here, I guess. But come that heart attack time, you end up with all sorts of follow-up appointments with doctors, right? And I collected this whole stable of ologists. I think I talked to somebody else about all the ologists you come up with, the cardiologist, the gastroenterologist, the speech and hearing guy, you know, all of them. Everybody is an ologist of some sort. So I had this whole assortment of doctors looking at me, because in that springtime, I went back to the ER again with another thing, which I now recognize was probably an MS hug, but I had this excruciating pain in my side. And when I breathed, it was hard and I was just miserable. And again, they sent me home with a pat on the head and said, "We're not quite sure what it is. Why don't you see?" And that's when I went to the gastroenterologist and they started doing workups for GERD. You know, is it a digestive issue that's causing problems? Nobody was quite looking at neurology at that point. The doctor that I was seeing at the time, my primary care physician, and this is the only doctor I've ever fired. After the heart attack, when I went to see him, he sat in his chair in the corner with his arms crossed and just talked to me, never once picking up his stethoscope to listen to my heart, which I would think would be an obvious thing to do. I had a couple repeat visits with him, follow-ups, and he never once touched me or really queried me about things. And then I was talking to him about my leg being numb, and he said, "Well, do you have headaches?" And I said, "No." And he dismissed it. He blew it off completely. And a friend urged me to see someone different. In the meantime, the person who really prompted me to get looked at truly was my mother. Because my father had come to where I was working at the time on a local university campus. Beautiful spring day, lovely grounds, and my sister was visiting from out of state. So my sister and my father came to campus, and we took a nice walk around campus because it's beautiful. It's like walking through an arboretum. Yeah. And we took this walk, and I didn't think a whole lot of it. And I get home after work that evening, and my mother's on the phone. She's saying, "Laura, your father tells me when you're walking, you're slapping your foot. What's going on?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, yeah, my leg's numb," but she said, "What's going on? You need to have this checked out." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So thinking about the family doctor and that, I looked for a different doctor and got in to see her in July. And it was just, this whole story is so convoluted, Steve. I when I think about it, I'm like, how many clues can you have, Laura, without, you know, the little sign holding up and flashing, stop, stop, stop.
Yeah, but there's a lot of different signs and there's a lot of contradictory signs. And when they're all kind of coming on top of each other, I think it's perfectly rational to kind of not go, "Oh, it's this," when you're having, you know, you've had a heart attack. I kind of think if you had a heart attack, you think, right, I'm done. Effectively, I'm done. That's it, everything. Don't be so hard on yourself. I think on top of everything else, it's hard to kind of go, right, there's a clear path to something.
Yeah. Well, and oddly, my husband and I took a trip from the US. We went to Belgium and had a lovely trip time in Brussels, went to Bruges, did these side trips. In July, we had this week abroad, and I was miserable the entire time. I mean, truly miserable, but pushed through. And we did what we could, sat in the sidewalk cafes and ate, discovered Bruges, blah, blah, blah. Did it all as best as I could. But by the time we were like 2 days before we were ready to return, I remember looking at my husband and just saying, you know, if I could go home now, I would. I don't know what's going on. So we got back and then I saw this new doctor. And she looked at me and said, "Okay, it looks like everybody's looking at everything else." And she recognized how many ologists I had been seeing. And she said, "Well, let's do some tests." So she ordered an EMG. For those of you who don't know, that's where they do the electric current testing. Let's do an EMG on that leg and see what's going on. Immediately, the results came back saying, "We don't know what's going on because we're getting mixed signals. Can you come back and let us rerun this?" And I went back and they did it a second time. And again, mixed signals. So this new doctor said, "Well, since we can't figure this out, maybe we should do an MRI. And this is the turning point in my story, because this doctor said, let's do an MRI and see what's going on. And immediately, within 24 hours of when I had had that MRI done, I was getting a phone call from her nurse saying, can you come in tomorrow to see the doctor?
Yeah.
She wants to see you. I'm like, well, first of all, I can't because I'm standing on the shore of Lake Erie when I'm answering this phone call. I'm out of town for the weekend, but can you tell me what's going on? And I'm fortunate that I have great doctors and that they empower their staff to work with their patients as well. So she read me the report and said, suspected demyelinating disease, blah, blah, blah. You know, with the contrast, I had active lesions that were just lit up like a golf course in my brain. I had holes everywhere in my brain. And, you know, so it was real clear. And I just looked at my husband off the phone and said, well, sounds like I have MS. Let's go to dinner because I need a drink. You know, and I had a couple real good stiff gin and tonics that night and said, okay, whatever this is, let's get on with it. So in the process of this, when I saw her in person the following week, she said, you know, the one thing I can't do is officially diagnose you. That needs to come from a neurologist. And I said, oh, okay. So she explained, you know, the intricacies of insurance and all that, making sure that the diagnosis is correct, that she recognized what I had, but did not want to officially label that until the experts did. And I'm fortunate here in Ohio where I live, we are resource rich for MS centers. We have them all over the place in the state, and they're all excellent centers. And so I went to Ohio State University, and when I called to get my appointment, I was told, oh, well, the doctor you want to see can't see you till November. Now, mind you, this is the end of July. And I was smart enough to say, do you have a waiting list you could put me on to call if you have a cancellation? And the woman I was talking to doing the scheduling said, oh, wait a minute, I have this new doctor coming on board. He's coming next week. Would you want to see him? And I thought, well, at least this gets my foot in the door and gets this process started. So I said, sure. And as it turned out, that's the same neurologist I'm still with today. I've followed him to different centers, and I'm still thrilled to recognize, acknowledge that the person who I interviewed earlier this year, Dr. Aaron Boster, is still my neurologist. And I got connected with him very early on. So that's when my official diagnosis came. So it was really less than a year from when my leg went numb walking to the mailbox to when I heard the word that I had MS, but it was certainly a convoluted path that I went through.
Yeah, but the whole thing basically took less than a year, and then you landed on your feet with Dr. Aaron Boster.
Yeah, so as good fortune would have it. But the looking back, Steve, the kicker to all this is how ignorant I was about thinking that it was MS, because I do have an aunt who has since passed away, but my mother's sister, who had multiple sclerosis. She was diagnosed in her 20s and advised not to tell anybody that she had it. She lived till she was almost 80. Her final probably 20 years, she used a wheelchair to get around and found ways to work around everything, but she definitely had MS. So I wasn't a stranger to the disease. I just never connected that it was going to happen to me.
Laura, do you have any advice for anybody who may be at the start of their own diagnosis journey?
You know, it's funny, Steve, as I think about that, it's not advice I learned on my own journey because I was kind of hit or miss, you know, like a pinball, just pinging off of things until eventually I landed with MS. So I don't have specific advice from what I went through. But since that time, I have really come to appreciate and understand the value of finding a care team that you trust, that you will, that will listen to you, that will work with you and respect what is best for you and your treatment plans. I also advise everyone, at least in that initial phase of getting a diagnosis or trying to find out what's wrong, don't make it a solo act. Take someone along with you who can help you process and capture the information that's being given to you, because so often you're not ready to hear what you're hearing. You're not equipped to take it in and process it. Whereas if you have a partner, a spouse, a child, a sibling, whoever, to go with you, they're able to sit there and hear without the emotional impact that you as the person receiving this diagnosis might undergo. So I really urge people to take someone along with them to be a companion on this journey. You know, Dr. Boster has this wonderful phrase that he uses all the time, and it's his hashtag we have MS, because it truly is a disease that affects everyone connected with you. So it is a family thing. It's the people that come in and out of your life, your coworkers. MS is always present and it affects everyone. So including those people in the beginning is, I think, really critical and important.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really, really key thing. And it's strange I didn't mention it. I'm not sure anybody else has mentioned that. But I know certainly when I went for all of my initial appointments, I never went on my own for precisely that reason. I didn't hear it. I didn't hear what people were saying to me. And there's only so much you can take in. That's a really key thing. Don't, wherever possible, it's not a solo thing. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I think that's critical. So that's my big takeaway that I would share with everyone is know that you're not in this alone. And it's really important to include others in this whole process as your support people, as your information processors, as the people that hold your hand and look at you and say, hey, we're in this together.
That's great, Laura. Thanks so much for sharing your story.
And thank you, Steve, for taking the time. I find it wonderful that you are my first guest, and now you're my final host.